This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick blames the increase of shootings on abortions and video game violence. Geek culture expert and writer at Machinima, Ray Carcello, is going to join me to discuss why video games are being used as a scapegoat. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me on again, Mason.
Recently, the NRA has come out to say that pop culture and video games are to blame for the increased violence we've seen amongst young people. What do you think about that?
I think it's an absolute joke. I think this is something that a lot of people who don't understand gaming culture and a lot of people who are looking to deflect blame on gun violence onto something else. It's been something they've used for years. I mean, literally decades at this point, to try and cover their own butts when it comes to the actual truth and the actual reasoning as to why gun violence occurs, particularly in this country. And you have to remember, a lot of these games are sold around the world, unedited, uncensored, and yet we're the only country that has these kinds of gun death numbers. So to blame gun violence and to blame gun culture on video games in the States is absolutely ridiculous because, again, games are a global thing and it doesn't happen anywhere else.
I see your point. Just to play the devil's advocate a little bit, when it comes to video games, though, don't you think that maybe they should, I don't know, maybe slow down on the gun violence or maybe not come out with so many games that are first-person shooters?
I mean, at the end of the day, that comes down to the companies themselves and what sells. I'm afraid that, you know, the first-person shooter genre is very popular around the world. It's a very immersive genre. And as the esports has risen, it's an easy genre to make competitive. So for a lot of companies, it's very profitable to make first-person shooters. So I understand why they flood the market. I also understand that sometimes a lot of these games, they don't all make it or end up being as popular as your Call of Duties or your Battlefields because the market is so saturated. I mean, I personally, for creative reasons, would love to see other games. But from a financial standpoint, it just makes too much sense for a lot of these companies to go the first-person shooter route. And with such massive games in the genre, like your Halos and your Call of Duties and your Battlefields, those aren't going to stop anytime soon.
And you know what? Speaking of video game companies and profit margins, you know, countries right now, they're making laws against loot boxes and loot crates. And these are legitimate laws. Like, it got to the point where it's so out of hand that countries had to say, hey, man, this is gambling. This is pretty bad. Why did it come to this? Why didn't the publishers just say, hey, man, maybe we just shouldn't do this anymore?
Well, I think the pay-to-win model was very profitable. You look at companies like Activision and EA specifically, and most of their profit margins came from games where they could sell loot crates or loot boxes, even if it was cosmetic stuff. I mean, Fortnite is a free-to-play game, but makes millions and millions of dollars every week. It's not every day just selling cosmetic stuff. So I think that, you know, trying to at least limit that to more of a cosmetic model so that it's not pay to win, because, again, there is so much money involved, especially in the competitive scene, I think this is a smart move, and I'm afraid that, you know, the companies, a lot of these companies they were too slow to get on the ball. And you're already seeing the ramifications of this with Battlefield 5. When EA did their reveal event, they announced that all DLC that's planned for the game will be free to everyone because the pay-to-win model is being banned around the world. And I'm afraid that it's just not going to work anymore. Although I wouldn't be surprised if at EA Play, EA announced that there is cosmetic things for sale in Battlefield 5 and that they added, especially with their added customization in the company, which is one of the new modes in that game. So I think that this is just a natural evolution of, you know, companies needing to be, you know, they learned a tough lesson here. I think this is something that we're learning a lot in general in our society, that just because rules are, there are going to be people out there who are willing to break rules that are unwritten, and you have to write the rules down now. And I think that obviously the video game companies are going to comply.
Now, one of the things that I get a little bit confused about is when people start throwing out the word loot crate, loot boxes, and microtransactions, I thought loot crates were just you paid an X amount of dollars and you got a random amount of gear, maybe a different color, or just random stuff in a box, in a virtual box. And then microtransactions is, you know, like a DLC, you pay $9.99 for an extra map. Is there a difference or is that all the same?
You know, it is kind of a grayish area. You could say microtransactions. Microtransactions, I think, is the broader term for DLC or content bought post-launch, whether it's cosmetically, whether it's in a loot crate, or whether it's DLC. Whereas the loot crate is a very specific, like you said, kind of a gamble where you're going to buy a virtual box, but you don't know what's in the box. So that microtransaction is the broader term for, I think, everything sold post-content, post the $60 purchase of your game, whereas the loot crate is a specific type of microtransaction where it does come across as gambling because you're dealing with a random number generator.
Because I was thinking to myself, like, you know, when I think of microtransactions, I think of mobile games. Like, you know, Clash of Clans, you pay 99 cents for 100 gems, $5.99 for 200 gems, you know, or something along those lines. When it comes to loot crates, I was thinking like random stuff that's more video game-esque. And I was wondering, like, at some point, do you think they're going to make laws for like mobile games? Because way back when, you know, maybe 4 years ago when everybody was like getting their iPhones and kids suddenly realized that with a click of a button, they can order anything, microtransactions for the mobile phones was a big bad thing for children. Like, hey, you got to lock your phone because the kids will accidentally spend $2,000 and put it on the phone bill. Do you think they'll make laws for that at some point?
I don't think so, because again, like Fortnite and a lot of these other games, they rely on those kinds of microtransactions. But the thing is, though, is that when you buy, like Pokemon Go, for example, you spend a dollar, you get 100 coins, then those 100 coins can be put towards Pokeballs or potions or whatever. You know specifically what your money is going towards. And I think that's, again, that's the major difference between, you know, the loot crates and everything else in terms of post-launch content. You know, it's that random number generator. When you don't have that aspect, when you know what you are spending your money on, at the end of the day, if your kid gets into your phone and starts tapping away, that's your fault. You know, that's on the consumer. But, you know, when you're not pulling the lever of a slot machine, the gambling aspect isn't there like with loot crates.
Now, I did read an article that was in Quora, and they asked what were some of the fatal design flaws in modern video games, and they gave a cool list. The first list was games with delayed launch dates, and they had Heavenly Sword, Lair, Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I think is a big one for me, and Kingdom Hearts 3. Do you agree with this list?
I understand what they're saying, but I think you have to understand that delays typically happen for a reason. I would rather a game take an extra year and be fantastic than to be rushed out the door with bugs and glitches and need tons of post-launch updates and patches. I think that, I mean, obviously this can bite the developer in the rear end if they're not careful. I think The Last Guardian is a perfect example. A decade worth of delays, and then we got what would have been probably a great PS3, PS2 game. You know, instead it ended up being a mediocre PS4 game. So I do think that there is a balance needs to be struck, but I think when a developer smartly delays their game, I think it's for good reason. I think, you know, I think Final Fantasy VII's Remake, I think Kingdom Hearts 3, I think people will be happy that the time was taken to make these games as good as possible. Now, Lair, of course, was a bit of a flop, so that game could have probably used a lot more time in development, but, you know, I think that delays are just part of the industry, and I think that it shows a developer who cares. I mean, again, you look at Red Dead Redemption 2 that's come out this year. It's been delayed a few times, delayed a couple, you know, for a few months here, a few months there, finally going to launch in October with no more delays, and I don't think there's anybody who isn't chomping at the bit to get their hands on that game, because I think it's going to be fantastic, and again, I don't think the delays will have hurt it at all.
You know, when it comes to delays, though, if it's been pushed back a year or two, maybe three, and I'll be like, you're right. Like, hey, man, I want this game to be as great as they possibly can do. Like, take your time. Go ahead. But when they push it back 2-3 years, and then they launch it, and it's still shit, I'm going to be upset. Because I think of Final Fantasy VII Remake, where at one point they're like, oh, it's coming out next year. And this was like, what, 2014, 2015. Yeah. So this game better be perfect. This better be perfection, you know? And if it's not, I'm going to be very upset.
That is the gamble, right? That is the gamble, that if you are delaying your game, it better be time well spent.
In the article by Quora, they did talk about some other, like, dishonorable mentions, and it's the QuickTime events. I happen to like QuickTime events, and this is where the game will prompt you to press a certain button or to do a certain sequence. I like it. What about you?
Depends on the game, and it depends on the scenario. I know it can get a bit tiresome in, like, the God of War series and whatnot, but when you kind of know when they're coming and know what to expect, I think they're all right, because they allow the game to... They allow you to still interact with a scene in the game that would not be able to be done otherwise through standard gameplay mechanics. And so I think when done well, I think QuickTime events are not the worst thing in the world, but definitely when they're used too much and too often, or and are just kind of used as shortcuts for lazy game development, I can see why they would be a hindrance in some games.
Here's one that I really want to talk about, and I think this is a really cool topic. It's games or consoles that have influenced pop culture. And this one I thought was cool. Dreamcast, the system, the old school Dreamcast, it actually introduced online gaming through dial-up. That was a big deal. I remember when my cousin bought one, and he never let me play it because of this. He's like, it's an expensive machine. It's too complex for you. What do you think? Do you think that Dreamcast helped shape the online realm?
I definitely think that's worthy of being on the list. You look at how important online play is to a game now, systems in general. I mean, you have games that won't even work unless they're connected to online. So I think that online has opened up an entire world of possibilities in terms of consoles and, of course, PC games. So I definitely think Dreamcast paving the way for internet usage on home consoles is definitely high up there. I mean, you wouldn't have so much of these esports competitions you have right now without, you know, online console play. And you wouldn't have a lot of games, period, without online console play. So definitely belongs on that list.
Yeah, it's funny you said Halo, because Halo is on the list too, because it formatted esports. It's one of the first championships that was out there that was even televised too. I think it was, MLG? They were on what channel was that on? Was it USA or TNT? I can't even remember, but they had their own television deal, and it was Halo was a big part of it. So, I mean, that helped a lot to where we are now with esports is, you know, kind of Halo. Thank you, Halo.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great one, too. Yeah, I mean, esports is dominating the industry right now, and yeah, I mean, the idea of games being competitive, again, it starts with online play. And I think that Halo definitely in terms of the shooters. But, I mean, to be fair also, I just wanted to mention, I mean, I remember going to my local gaming stores, mom-and-pop shops, and there'd be, like, Street Fighter 2 tournaments and GoldenEye tournaments and whatnot back in the day. So definitely in terms of esports and online sports, Halo's there. But games have always had a bit of a competitive edge to them for at least far back as I've been playing.
Yeah, well, yeah, high score. I mean, if people weren't trying to beat a high score at, you know, in their old school arcade cabinet at the gas station, then you weren't playing games, sir.
Yes, Joust at Vinny's Pizzeria in New Jersey. That was my game.
It's funny you talk about GoldenEye. I think it deserves to have a spot in the top five of most important games out there, because that kind of revolutionized what people expected out of a first-person shooter. I mean, it had its own little glitches. It was it was a lot of fun. It had multiplayer. So a lot of people, I don't think, talk enough about it.
Yeah, no, I think it's easy to forget about GoldenEye considering how far we've come.
Yeah.
And admittedly, as much as I love it, it doesn't necessarily stand the test of time. But for 1997... I mean, GoldenEye was revolutionary on so many levels, and obviously, like you said, it kind of paved the way for a lot of this stuff in terms of first-person shooters and in terms of competition, in terms of people finding, you know, little advantages in the game that might not have necessarily been thought of by the developer or thought of initially, but that players find and utilize and take advantage of. A whole culture emerges from games like that. And so definitely GoldenEye, I think, could have been on that list as well.
This year, 2018, I got a list of the top-selling games of this year. The first one is Far Cry 5. I didn't play it. Is this game good enough to be number one?
I think it's good enough at this point, but it's not going to stay at number one, I think, for by the end of the year. In fact, I'd be surprised if it stays in the top five by the end of the year, actually.
Really?
I think it's just, it's been a bit of a slow first half, I think, in terms of real AAA flash releases, in terms of, like, being out there. I think it also has the advantage of being multi-console. Being Xbox One, PS4, PC definitely gives Far Cry 5 an advantage over some other games, and I think that, as you see, a lot of games that are going to be announced at E3 and that are going to be coming out this year, I think, like, I can already tell you now that Spider-Man, Call of Duty, Battlefield, and Red Dead Redemption 2 should all be ahead of Far Cry 5 by the end of the year. That's four right there. So I think that it's just taking advantage right now of a relatively slow time in games.
Now, number two is Monster Hunter World. I honestly thought that would have been number one, because everybody was just, like, geeked out about this game.
Again, you know, it made a splash during a slow time in January. It also multi-console, also a bit more niche. I mean, again, everybody was playing it, and a lot of people love it, but Monster Hunter World is still a bit more niche than something like a first-person shooter like Far Cry, so it doesn't have the appeal, the wider appeal as something like Far Cry 5 has, so in terms of its genre.
So 3, 4, and 5 is God of War 2018, 4 is Call of Duty World War 2, and then 5 is Dragon Ball FighterZ. But number 6 is Grand Theft Auto 5. Now, I'm still shocked that this is up here. Do you have any reason why it's on this list?
You know, it's considering how long it's been out, it is a little bit surprising, but I think it's just that you have a lot of late adopters to consoles and to sometimes games in general, and sometimes people just, you know, they're just in it for the story, or they only play a game or two a year. And, you know, so they wait for those games to go on sale. They wait for those games to hit bargain bin prices. So it might still be selling very well, but it's not making as much money as, like, a lot of other games on the list, because I don't believe that Grand Theft Auto 5 is still selling for $60 a pop. So I know a lot of folks out there who I've just started playing. I actually know folks who have just started playing GTA 5 in the last, like, 6 months. So, you know, they would probably fall within that range. And I think it's because they waited for it to go on sale. They waited for the time to sink into it, because it is such a deep, immersive game with a strong online community still. So, yeah, I think I'm not completely surprised it's on the list. Maybe a little bit that high, but games like Grand Theft Auto are console and generation defining kind of games when they release, which is why it usually takes Rockstar so long to release them. So yeah, I'm not surprised that GTA 5 is still on there.
So 7 is NBA 2K18 and 8 is MLB 18 The Show. I'm completely shocked that these games are on here. But then again, I don't play sports games. Are these good enough to be on the top 10 list right now?
NBA 2K has a built-in audience. Like, it's going to sell a certain amount of games no matter what, all the time, every year. And there's always going to be, again, there'll be people who will wait for it to go on sale, because usually sports games will see a huge price drop 6 months after their release. So that would have been March for NBA 2K. Also, obviously, with the playoffs starting, the game usually gets a boost in sales. I personally did not think this year's edition of NBA 2K was worthy to be in the top 10, but again, it doesn't matter how bad or good the game is, it's always going to sell because it has a built-in audience who buy it every year. Same thing with MLB The Show. Admittedly, I'm surprised The Show is there, because it's a PS4 exclusive, and as much as I hate to say it, because I am a huge baseball fan, but baseball is not nearly as popular as it used to be. That one I am genuinely shocked made the top 10, but I'm happy to see it there as a baseball fan.
Now, number 9 is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Have you ever played this game before?
I have played it. It's terrible on Xbox One. It's just so broken. I think it's been fixed at this point, but I gave up on it after its disastrous console launch. But it's still hugely popular on PC. People are still picking it up. Again, a game that has a huge esports following. Again, it kind of really put a new genre, or at least a game mode, into the limelight. I know people who play this game religiously. I'm not surprised it's there. I'm sure, though, that it's doing much, much better on console, on PC than it is on console.
And number 10 is Mario Kart 8. Yeah, Mario Kart 8. I can't get excited about it because once you played one Mario Kart, you kind of played them all. Or am I just being like, you know, like being kind of bad about it? Should I be more excited about Mario Kart?
I completely understand where you're coming from with that. I'm genuinely surprised that a year after the Switch's launch, considering it was a title that came out within the first month of the Switch's launch, that's the game that is still up there. I would have said Zelda or Mario Odyssey or one of the more single-player flares. This kind of shows how competition is really driving video games and video game sales in general. Because Mario Kart 8 has developed a really strong online community for it, and I'm sure that that's part of it, too, is that just probably late adopters, people trying to get into it. And also, if you're buying a Switch, that's one of the great first real, like, family games that you can get. So I'm not too surprised that Mario... I mean, I'm a little surprised, but I also understand why Mario Kart 8 has cracked the top 10.
Well, like you said beforehand, that as the year goes on, this list is going to change drastically. So I'm sure most of these games are just going to fall off. No problem whatsoever.
Yeah.
Now, later on this month, we're going to have E3. Is there anything at E3 that we should be like putting our ear to the ground to?
So I think that with E3 is going to be a huge. It's going to be huge this year. First off, you're going to see a bigger push from VR, from PSVR. Sony has, I think, almost a half dozen shooters planned for PlayStation VR. Some of them look absolutely amazing. I played a couple of them at PSX last year. You're going to see more of those. You're going to see a strong PlayStation VR push. Think also expect a lot of interesting stuff from Ubisoft, Splinter Cell, Division 2. I would be surprised if they did an Assassin's Creed, but I don't know what else they're going to have to display this year because they've already announced Skull and Bones has been pushed to 2019. But at the very least, Division 2 and Splinter Cell are basically locked in from Ubisoft. Bethesda announced Fallout 76 today. We're going to learn about that. People are speculating, is this an MMO? Is it a brand new game? Is it done by Bethesda proper, or has it been being done by a third, another developer like Obsidian did with Fallout New Vegas? What's going on with this game? You're also going to get probably some more Elder Scrolls Online stuff from Bethesda. Also, Capcom showing off a new Mega Man 11 trailer. Like, for me, I'm super, super excited for that game when that comes out in October. Again, going back to Sony, you're going to see a lot of Spider-Man. A ton of Spider-Man, and probably some more single-player fare. They're really focusing on narrative games. It seems to be their bread and butter. The only one that has really is a question mark. Oh, yeah, Nintendo's going to do Smash Brothers, heavy on Smash Brothers, and also heavy on Pokemon, probably. And then the only real question mark is, what is Xbox going to show? Microsoft has a absolute dearth right now of titles. So unless they're coming out with both Halo 6 and Gears of War 5, I don't think Crackdown 3 is going to be enough to get fans excited. And I really don't know what else they might have up their sleeve to really pull off a really worthy show for having a press conference. It's going to be a really big E3 this year. A lot of great games are on their way. A lot of games that I'm hugely anticipating that we're going to get to see more of firsthand, finally. And PlayStation VR, I think expect a bigger push from that this year.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, definitely follow me on Twitter at Ray Carcillo. You can also follow me on Facebook at raycarcillo.voice. You can also like the Machinima page on Facebook. I'm writing for those guys now, doing some fun stuff with them. So definitely keep an eye out for some projects that I'm working on with those guys. But definitely Twitter and Facebook are definitely the best places to find me right now.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.